If you're a bacon lover, today is your day. So whether alongside your eggs for breakfast, on a BLT, or wrapped around a filet, bacon is free for a year at Good Ranchers. Subscribe to get 24 ounces of Applewood smoked bacon added to each delicious box for a year. That's over $200 worth of bacon free. This is 100% American, high-quality bacon sourced from local farms with no added hormones or antibiotics. To subscribe, simply find your perfect box in the Good Ranchers curated selection of pasture-raised meat and wild-caught seafood. Select the frequency that works best for you, and then enjoy fewer trips to the meat aisle and more flavor at dinner. As long as you stay subscribed, your price will never increase. That's the Good Ranchers price lock guarantee. Subscribe today at goodranchers.com for free bacon in every box for a year. Use code Dana to get an additional $20 off your first order. Get the best meat America has to offer. Visit goodranchers.com. That's goodranchers.com, code Dana. Good Ranchers, American meat delivered.
You know, just like when in the military, my son was in Iraq for a year, other places, there's so many members of the military coming back with post-traumatic stress after witnessing the violence. You know, just like when in the military, my son was in Iraq for a year, other places, there's so many members of the military coming back with post-traumatic stress after witnessing the violence and participating in it. Well, these children, these teachers, you should be focusing on their mental health as well. And so I'm grateful anyway. Sorry to start off that way, but I couldn't begin without acknowledging what happened. You know, just
like when there was a weird way when he started his address. When he started his address, that was a really weird way to start all of this, because it was, he like walked out. We said this yesterday because it was happening right as we were finishing the program. And it was odd because, I mean, he launched right from that, going right into talking about politics. And it just seemed entirely, utterly tone deaf. And I mean, I just don't know how to, I don't know how to explain it. I mean, there's no way to explain it. Welcome to the show. Dana Lash here with you. And we're going to recap everything that we were learning yesterday about all of this, this horrific tragedy that took place. And we've got a lot of information to go over. So to start with, and I wrote about this, there's two pieces up at the newsletter, chapter and verse, that you can go and read. We were quite busy last night. I was quite busy last night going over everything, following everything as it came in. Lorraine has a piece up, and I also have a history that gets into the statistics of the assault weapons, all of that stuff. What really gets me is how, I mean, I'm not surprised, but the swiftness with which Democrats immediately went out and decided to blame everything but the person involved. And this was really kind of one of the first times I actually saw the press kind of run defense for a murderer. And I have an entire piece for you also on that. So, I mean, it's just stunning. You had the press, everybody from the Washington Post to even other Democrats, everybody, going all in to blame everyone from the victims, their faith, to any politician in the area, anyone, instead of the actual murderer involved. Now, camera footage came out today also, the body cam footage from the police. I mean, it's nothing short of heroic. The officers with the Metropolitan Nashville Police responded. And it really is a stark contrast to the cowardice seen in Uvalde and even Parkland. Two in particular, these officers went in. There was a response team that went in. the officers' names, Rex Engelbert, who's a 4-year veteran, Michael Collazo, a 9-year veteran. They were part of a team of first responders to that campus. And they were the ones who, on the body cam footage, which I viewed, they are the ones who neutralized the killer. They didn't wait 77 minutes in a hallway. They responded fast, within minutes. They responded with bravery. There was zero hesitation. They ran to the sound of danger. And it is nothing, as I said, short of heroic. So this, it's wild because I just remember just this past week, last week, you had the officers in Uvalde who were blaming the fact that the killer had a semi-automatic rifle and they had tons of dudes also that had their own semi-automatic rifles, but that's why they couldn't go in. Or Parkland, Scott Israel immediately was looking for where the cameras were so he could talk to the cameras and get himself some press. I mean, it's just something. So we're going to get into we're going to talk about the response. We're going to talk about a whole bunch of things. We're also going to talk about the fight the right has got to have about transgenderism, because there's too many damn people on the side of conservatism that are accommodating so many things that they were against 15 years ago. We're going to rip the Band-Aid off hair and all, and we're going to have an honest conversation about it, because I'm already seeing some people on the right saying, are conservatives really going to go to the route of saying that this is a mental illness? Yes. Do you have a problem with it? Maybe then you have one too. I'm tired of it. So again, welcome to the nationally syndicated radio program. You can listen coast to coast, market near you, and you can watch the simulcast that is on YouTube through the first, Facebook and DirecTV channel 347. So to start off with, let's go back. This is just some of the stuff we're going to cover this first hour. We're also going to talk with Stephen Holbrook later on about some of the stuff with the pistol brace rule, et cetera, et cetera. We have energy. We have all kinds of stuff to get into. But first and foremost, the president had called for a new assault weapons ban yesterday while remarking on this tragedy. And the White House spokesperson, can we have this audio? Let's start with this audio. We played his. She said this. I don't have the list in front of me, just a second. Yes. She was the one. She asked, well, how many more children does it take? This was an absolutely asinine question to ask. Listen to this.
In his State of the Union, the president called on Congress to do something to stop the epidemic of gun violence, tearing families apart, tearing communities apart. How many more children have to be murdered before Republicans in Congress will step up and act to pass the assault weapons ban?
So I wrote about this. First of all, I think it's absolutely ghoulish that she did this. This is absolutely ghoulish. For the idea that the assault weapons ban is needed or has ever worked is false. There was, numerous studies. There's a Department of Justice study. You have all the receipts for this if you're a subscriber to Chapter and Verse. There was a Department of Justice study. In fact, there were a couple. A Department of Justice study that showed there was zero evidence that the ban had any impact on gun homicide rates at all. There was a Journal of Internal Medicine study that concluded that the assault weapons ban had zero impact on gun homicide rates. You have the RAND Corporation. They concluded, with updates even earlier this year, that an assault weapons ban would have zero impact on reducing gun homicide rates. The New York Times had published a thorough deep dive on assault weapons and the ban and came to the same conclusion. PolitiFact. Numerous studies. You're talking about something that's responsible for the fewest homicides annually, and it does absolutely nothing to reduce the overwhelming firearm-related homicide that is brought on by what? Drug and gang violence? Barack Obama remarked yesterday, he said, oh, it's the number one killer of children. It's the number one killer of children. Do you know where they're getting this phrase from? Do you know where they're getting this saying from? They're getting this saying from an old survey that counted children ages 2 to 19, and it is overwhelmingly and arguably drug and gang violence that drives it. That is the big thing. But they want to put it as though, they want to make it as though these are all school-aged children because they want to fearmonger. In these instances, Pulse Nightclub, Parkland, Sandy Hook, Uvalde, the Rite Aid in Maryland, going to Colorado Springs, to Denver, to California, to Washington. I'm looking at my list of all of these mass casualty incidents, every single one of them, without exception amongst any. These were all known to their, all of them were known to law enforcement. All of them were known to law enforcement. So this, his call for this ban is entirely, it's unneeded because it doesn't work. Zero evidence. I mean, the Journal of Internal Medicine, they reluctantly had to admit this. The Journal of Internal Medicine, they were trying to argue that, well, maybe some stronger gun policies. But no, they actually had to finally admit that, yes, it doesn't have any impact. None of it has any impact. The facts remain. It's also worth noting that it's silly to have this conversation at all without comparing it to defensive gun usage, which, according to all available publicly posted criminal statistics, outweighs that of criminal usage. But those people don't want to acknowledge that. I mean, it's pretty amazing, some of the stuff I saw, and I'm looking at some of it now. I have a piece that's up, and it's titled, "We're Entering New Territory Where the Left Feels Violence is Justified." Newish, because they've always kind of felt that it was justified, but now more than ever. I mean, I was watching a number of journalists and lawmakers and everybody else run defense for a child killer because the female killer wanted to use male pronouns. They so boggled the initial coverage, nobody had any idea if we were talking about a dude or a chick. USA Today tried to put their ideology in the mouth of the police chief when they tweeted at 11:05 p.m., quote, "Police on Monday afternoon said the shooter was a transgender man. Officials had initially misidentified the gender of the shooter." They didn't misidentify what she wanted to cosplay as in her make-believe fantasy world. She was a broad who wanted to use male pronouns. No one cares what the killer cosplays as. It's a distraction from the people who actually matter, the victims. I had trans activists going at me yesterday. No one gives a rat's ass what you want to cosplay as. Nobody cares. It was just shocking to see how blatant it was. I'm going to play some audio for you coming up about all of this, and we're going to talk about SROs. We're also going to get into the Biden budget push because he's already moved on. He's already moved on. And the problem with violence. Violent trans activists is now the norm and not the exception. We'll discuss this as well because this is not the first angry trans activist, and nor will it, I hate to say it, I hope to God it's the last. But there are a number of examples that we're going to talk about. And again, if you have the email newsletter, Chapter and Verse, over at Substack, you got it. As colleges and universities across the country hold their graduations, I'd like to highlight a place where students receive the best classical liberal arts education in America. And when these students graduate, they've studied the great books, the history of Western civilization and of America, and the meaning and history of the Constitution. Can you guess who I'm talking about? I'm talking about Hillsdale College. Hillsdale was founded in 1844 to offer the kind of education needed to preserve civil and religious liberty, and holds true to that mission while refusing to accept one penny of taxpayer funding, not even indirectly, in the form of student grants and loans. Hillsdale students also abide by an honor code, which ensures a unity of purpose and fosters lively, civil, and intelligent debate. See for yourself and learn from Hillsdale for free through their influential speech digest in Primus and by taking online courses on American history, the Constitution, and other subjects. Find out more at dana4hillsdale.com. That's dana4, forhillsdale.com. Join the battle over education for our country's future today.
How much attention should you be giving the Hunter Biden investigation? Although it's not illegal, both sides of the aisle have been engaging in influence peddling for decades. The voters are ultimately responsible for electing these corrupt politicians. What can you as the voter do? Check out the Watchdog on Wall Street podcast on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcast.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
This is funny to me. A handful of cows found their way into, this is real, this is actually real in Montana. A handful of cows found their way into a newly built home and lived in it for a month before they were noticed. Yes, actual, like, cow squatters. That's an actual photo that Juan is showing on the simulcast. Well, it's a painting of it, but they said the family was moving from Washington. The aunt was supposed to be checking on the place. She didn't. A rancher filed a report about missing some cattle, even checked their barn, but not the house. They think a storm sent them looking for cover, and they also think the storm blew in a door or the cows nudged one open somehow, and it was just awful. It was an awful instance. I think it's actually kind of hysterical. I've just never heard anything like this before. A 36-year-old mother almost had to have her legs amputated because she fell asleep kneeling off on all fours following a boozy night out, cut off her circulation for hours. Julia Anderson passed out because she is a moron. She drank about 20 drinks on an empty stomach. She's from Canada. And she nearly lost her legs because she cut off her circulation. She collapsed on her bed kneeling on all fours. And when she woke up, her legs had ballooned to double their size. She couldn't move on her own. That's insane. So I guess she's coming back to normal. But the photos that were, I mean, it is, she had to undergo dialysis, a blood transfusion, and a skin graft on top of her leg. She was hospitalized for 5 weeks. That's just wild. Madonna announces a Nashville stop on her celebration tour. And the proceeds aren't going to victims or victims' families, but they're going to the militant trans organizations after Tennessee. They're blaming the state of Tennessee for passing these bills. Pillowface McTallon only in the studio is going to be going to Nashville to try to parlay her aging relevance into some sort of politics that a lot of celebrities who are on the sunset end of their professional lifespan think are going to give them an extra 15 minutes. I have nothing nice to say at all. And normally you would be like, well, then don't say it at all. I'll tell you to come sit by me. And then finally, Team Canada. So this guy's redeeming the drunk girl. Their powerlifting coach, Avi Silverberg, just broke the Alberta women's bench press. He did it, though, on purpose. The Heroes Classic. The former record holder, a trans-identifying male, had a front row view as Silverberg mocked the whole thing and broke the women's world record in the event just to show him, like, this is why this is so stupid. Women wouldn't have a place in sports. Good for him. Stay with us. Black Rifle Coffee Company set out on a mission to make the best cup of coffee that's ever hit your mug. And I think they've hit that mission straight on. Their dream has been to sell enough premium coffee to build a support network for veterans, first responders, and law enforcement. And thanks to your support, that dream has come true. Black Rifle Coffee is roasted by a veteran-led team of brilliant coffee graders who work tirelessly to roast and bag the highest quality coffee here in America. And the coffee is truly one of a kind and my favorite. Your support has helped Black Rifle Coffee Company expand their team of active duty service members, veterans, and veteran family members, and they were able to donate over 120,000 bags of coffee to veterans and first responders in 2022. Visit blackriflecoffee.com/Dana and use my code Dana at checkout for 20% off your purchase and your first coffee club order. That's blackriflecoffee.com/Dana. Use code Dana and also look for Black Rifle Coffee in grocery and convenience stores. Black Rifle Coffee, America's coffee.
Listen to The Dana Show live on the Odyssey app. Weekdays, noon to 3 p.m. Eastern Time.
We'll say to Republicans in Congress is, what are you going to say to these parents? What are you going to say to these family members? 63% of Americans, and I heard this poll laid out here on the show earlier today, it's a political poll, said that they want to see safer gun safety measures. They want to see that. That is the will of the people. So Republicans need to listen to majority of Americans in this country.
Well, let's fisk that because it's incredibly misleading. First off, welcome back to the program. Dana Loesch here with you. Bottom of our first hour. A lot of stuff to hit. Coming up, we're going to hit the IRS visiting Matt Taibbi. We're going to hit the Biden budget battle because he's now pushing that even more. There's a number. I mean, I just have so much stuff for you guys today. I'm going to try so hard to work this in. The death of a religious society. I have so much for you. Let's just go through. First off, Karine Jean-Pierre, she, again, in that audio soundbite, too, was asking, well, what are Republicans going to do? She cites this survey. It's a Kaiser Health survey that builds on a previous one that they have. And in fact, I have like 18 years of polling data that I was just going through over yesterday evening. All this polling data from, you know, the past, you know, almost two decades. It's never been a top three concern, gun control. And in all of the instances where gun control has been surveyed, it's always been typically when they're trying to get either some sort of majority survey for assault weapons ban or some sort of majority survey for magazine restriction, etc. It's a push pull, meaning they're basically leading your questions. And it's really weird survey size, and it's typically oversampled with people who, with people who are on the left. And this Kaiser Health poll, this is where they're trying to pull this from. This was published, trying to find the date on this. This Kaiser poll that I have, there was one that was revisited earlier this month, earlier last month. And they were saying, oh, 63% of Americans want gun laws to change. And they were trying to cite this Gallup poll, which was a push poll. I mean, they would ask things like, do you think we should have background checks? Like, without telling people, well, we have background checks. You know, do you think that, you know, that's, they're trying to push for universal background checks. Or they would say, they would ask very leading questions like this. Do you think, where they would beg the question, meaning they would ask you a question, but present it in a way to where the conclusion was true. So if you're based on the premise, it would assume the validity of the premise. So if you have a push pull that's asking you whether or not you think, well, they're asking it in the way that as though background checks don't exist. And so do you think that we should have universal background checks? And they conflate the two in the questioning that they ask. So that's the problem with these sorts of surveys. In fact, some of the, and I'm going to pull this up if you bear with me, because I have a lot of data here and I just wanted to just knock this talking point that she has down. It's never actually been a majority position. Majority has actually always opposed gun control. And in some instances, it may have been a slimmer majority than not, but it has always been a majority of Americans that have opposed the gun control restrictions like the ones that are pushed by Democrats, because people understand universal background checks means the only way that that operates is to have a gun control or have a firearm registry. So the government knows exactly everything everyone has, because that's what it would take in order to satisfy every single even lawful in-state transfer. And sidebar to this, all of these are still federally regulated. And if you disagree with me on it, then why is there a federal penalty? Moving on. So she's wrong on that. Secondly, Democrats, as I pointed out, Democrats don't want gun control. Let's be real, really, really honest about this. Democrats do not want gun control. If Democrats wanted gun control, if they had wanted gun control more than they wanted to win elections, they would have passed gun control when they controlled both the House and the Senate and the White House. They would have passed it before midterm elections. They would have passed it when Barack Obama was president and Democrats held for the first portion of his first term a supermajority before special elections. If Democrats wanted gun control more than they wanted to win elections, they would have passed it. When they were in power, they did not. And they didn't because they know gun control polls horribly. They didn't because they know that with higher crime rates, people will vote their security. Democrats simply cannot be honest about it. So that's the other reality of this situation. She was saying, well, what are Republicans going to say? What are Republicans in Congress? What are you going to say to these parents? Well, what are you going to say to these parents, Karine? Your party, when you held power, you didn't pass it. If it was that important to you, why did Democrats not do anything when they held power, House, Senate, and White House? not just for Biden. Why didn't they do it for Barack Obama? And when he won in 2008, there for a period, Democrats had they had supermajority. They could have run anything through. They actually did until a special election. They still had majority after that, but they lost that supermajority. So why did they not do anything? $1 million question. So let's go ahead and relieve ourselves of that ridiculous talking point right now. No, they immediately quickly blamed. So the reality of the situation is that you had a woman who said she was transgender, who used male pronouns to go and target a Christian school. I think she purposefully targeted a Christian school. She went into a church and apparently didn't find everything she was looking for there. So she decided to go through the school. And honestly, it almost sounded like she was hunting down the pastor's daughter. And I have people like Adam Kinzinger who say goofy things like, it's time for us to discuss the availability of guns and impact on mental health, blah, blah, blah. You know, to oppose this stuff. You know what it's time to talk about? It's time to talk about jacking people up with tons of hormones when you have no long-term study as to how it affects their mental health or overall physiology or anything else. There's absolutely no data on this, but you guys are just completely fine with just pumping people full of hormones at arbitrary levels, completely healthy people, and engaging them in this fantasy of cosplay to the point where you actually encourage them to mutilate themselves as some form of sexual seppuku. It's wild. Let's have that conversation. I mean, no, the reason we can't have real conversations about this, and Lord knows I have tried. I sat in an arena next to a bad cop who didn't even have 1/16th of the bravery that these officers in Nashville had, who wanted to not just blame me, he wanted to blame all of you for his inability to do his job. The killer's mother was a gun control activist. Do y'all know this? I don't like saying the name, and I'm going to get into the copycat effect here coming up. But it's true. The mother was a gun control activist, shared all kinds of gun control stuff. That's kind of typically sort of how it goes. For all of their talk on gun control and their belief in gun control and their families, I mean, clearly, I mean, I know now it's in our nature to sit here and immediately draw political lines when a tragedy occurs. I think it's safe to say that they didn't fit the media stereotype. They didn't fit the media stereotype of what the killer was supposed to be, so the killer has to make them the victim. It has to be the fault of, I mean, how many people? It has to be the fault of, what is it? Christians. Or it's Tennessee. It's Tennessee's fault because Tennessee passed a bill prohibiting unnecessary non-medical surgery on healthy children. This is what listen to this. This is audio soundbite. Forgive me. I'm looking at, it's like 5,011-4. This is audio soundbite 7. I want you to listen to ABC's Terry Moran. I want you to listen to what he intimates here in this clip.
All right, that is Police Chief John Drake of Nashville, who is briefing reporters on the deadly grade school shooting in Nashville at the Covenant School there this morning. The police confirming 6 dead, 3 children, 1 8 years old, 2 9 years old, and 3 adults, including Catherine Kuntz, who is the head of the Covenant School. The police chief also said that the shooter has been identified as 28-year-old female Audrey Hale. Said she's a former student of the school and confirmed that Audrey Hale identified herself as a transgender person. State of Tennessee earlier this month passed and the governor signed a bill that banned transgender medical care for minors, as well as a law that prohibited adult entertainment, including male and female impersonators, after a series of drag show controversies in that state.
There were actually journalists out there that were saying that because Daily Wire is located in Nashville, that it was how did I have this? I had the screenshot for you in my email newsletter. Forgive me. I want to make sure I get this correct. They had labeled it as, and I had this because they deleted it immediately. They called it, a hub of anti-trans activity, is how Benjamin Ryan, a Blue Check journo, put it. And then you had ABC's Terry Moran suggest that the recently passed ban on experimental medically unnecessary surgery was tied to the massacre, as though there was some sort of justification in it. Huffington Post went after Representative Andy Oglas, who represents the district where the school is located. They said that, this is what they, Claire McCaskill, everybody ran with yesterday. I mean, for hours, guys, hours. Quote, Representative Andy Oglas, who represents the district where Covenant school shooting occurred, posted a Christmas photo with his family holding guns in 2021. And they were pictured holding rifles responsibly, good, trigger discipline, etc. The reason they posted that was to blame it's like akin to victim blaming, but they wanted to incite against him. Let's be honest about it. This is Amat Bailey. They'll post something like this, and then when you accuse them of the truth, that you want to incite violence against this guy, they go, no, we were just pointing this out, and they retreat back to a safer position from which to argue. No, we just wanted, no, you didn't. You wanted to incite against him. What is the point of trying to tie this innocent dad who simply was holding a firearm and he's there with his kids? What is the point in trying to tie him to this massacre? Everyone else is to blame but the killer. The transgender killer who murdered and purposefully targeted a Christian school days ahead of Trans Day of Vengeance. Don't believe me that it was targeted? Go ahead and listen to the Nashville police chief audio sound bite. I believe this was 8.
So I didn't hear you say that again, sir.
Is there any reason to believe that how she identifies has any motive for targeting the school?
We can give you that at a later time. There is some theory to that. We're investigating all the leads, and once we know exactly, we will let you know.
So was this a targeted attack?
And so this is how the media was trying to, the way that they were asking questions of this police chief, these are audio sound bites 5 and 6. They were so fascinated in spending more time on, apparently how she identified than not. This is audio sound bite 5.
She identifies as transgender.
She does identify as transgender. Yes.
Is there any reason to?
Wild. Absolutely wild. You also have the Washington Post's Ozzy, I guess some reporter who thinks he's Cher, going by one name, also tying that lawmaker in. I mean, this is some of the stuff that was happening yesterday. We're also going to address coming up the prison component of this for SROs. And then we have wokery, the death of a religious society. Americans have had it. They're done supporting companies that rake in hundreds of millions, sometimes billions of dollars, while trashing the country that made their success possible. Until recently, we had to take it. But companies like Patriot Mobile are building a whole new economy, one which embraces the values that made America the greatest country on earth. Patriot Mobile, America's only Christian conservative wireless provider, offers dependable nationwide coverage on all three major networks. Plus, they offer a coverage guarantee. If you're not happy with your coverage, you can switch to a different network for free without changing carriers. With Patriot Mobile, their 100% U.S.-based customer service team makes switching easy. Just visit patriotmobile.com/Dana or call them right now at 878-PATRIOT. Get free activation today using offer code Dana. We should stand together and support companies that share our values. patriotmobile.com/Dana or call 878-PATRIOT. That's patriotmobile.com/Dana or call 878-PATRIOT.
Red meat, black coffee, truth telling. The Dana Show.
And we have to do more to protect our schools so they aren't turned into prisons. The shooter in this situation reportedly had 2 assault weapons and a pistol, 2 AK-47.
Oh my gosh. He didn't have an AK-47. One of them wasn't even AR platform. Good grief. Welcome back to the program. Dana Lash here. That's obviously President Biden again mucking something up yesterday. There were a lot of people who were just blasting the idea of SROs, school resource officers. Lots of them were. And it was at the point where it just angers me because I feel like people are not interested in having a serious discussion about school security. All of these people, most of the people who are lamenting this, you know, the presence of SROs in schools, they say, oh, it's like a prison. You're going to turn it into a prison. Is that what you think when you walk into a concert? You think it's a prison? Is that what you think when you walk into a jewelry store? Do you think it's a prison? Do you think it's a prison when you go to a football game? Do you think it's a prison when you go to a baseball game? Do you think it's a prison when you go to a soccer match? Do you think it's a prison when you're on the plane? Well, I mean, that might be a sidebar. Everywhere these people go, at some point, they are protected by guns. They are protected by good people with guns, and they don't even know it. They have no idea. Most of the people who compare SROs to jailers, they don't have any clue about this. Have the discussion, if you want, in your school, in your community, about the most effective way to protect kids using school resource officers without turning SROs into disciplinarians. That's fine. But harden soft targets, please. There is too much evil in this world. Too much accommodation of criminality, which we're going to discuss, to leave our children's security to chance or to things like an unlocked door, like in Uvalde, or an open door, like in Parkland. Coming up. Oh boy, where do we start? We have a lot to get to. The violence of the militant trans activist movement. We're also going to talk about the absence now, the death of a religious society, that Wall Street Journal poll, and all the latest. And we're going to talk with Stephen Holbrook, who's going to give us some insight onto a number of things, whether it's the pistol brace or the AR-15. We got a lot to discuss, and even more on the way. Stick with us. Second hour coming up.
You know, look, pronouns do not kill children, right? People with guns kill children, and it's going to be a distraction in our coverage and keep us from what we now know, which is each of these cases has a similarity more than any difference.
Wow. That is CNN's Juliette Kayyem saying that it's not the pronouns. They're again, it's like running defense for this murder. And this is some of the stuff that I want to get into. There's so many different aspects of this story. And then, of course, we also have the TikTok bill. You need a warning about this bill. There's a lot to get into today. Welcome to the program. Welcome back. Top of our second hour. Dana Lash here with you this Tuesday. The argument, pronouns don't kill children, people with guns kill children. There's going to be a huge fight on the right, and the right needs to figure out what's going on with itself over the whole issue of transgenderism. It has to happen. Because you have some segments of the right that I get the idea of a big tent. But then this is where you get in from ideology to party. It's about strategy. However, I think that this is a little different, because if you're talking about transgenderism as gender dysphoria, that is a mental illness. Not all mental illness induces violence. And I think it's important to acknowledge that as well, because if you don't, then what happens when you have people who have mental illness where the only person they want to be violent against is themselves and not to anyone else? I mean, I think it prevents people from going and seeking treatment. I think it stereotypes veterans who have PTSD and they're returning from combat. I think I do think that it has to be spoken of in an educated manner, because there's a lot of differences. But there is mental illness that absolutely does induce people to violence. And I think anyone that's going to go and shoot up a school of kids is evil, willfully evil, and chooses to indulge the worst aspects of their mental illness. I don't give them a pass. They're evil monsters. So how do we do that? This is why I bring this up. Because it needs to be discussed. We're in a really weird period right now, because it feels like we're entering the justification phase. Everything that I was sharing with you last hour, the media running defense for these, for this murderer, the blue checks, blaming everyone from the Christians who ran the school to, I mean, the community to everybody. All of this is, it's kind of wild, and it doesn't get to the heart of the matter, which is, what is the motivation? I mean, clearly, it sounded like, from what the police said, that this individual wanted to get revenge on something. They were mad at the Christians at the school. It's weird that the same media that races to brand all law-abiding firearms as firearm owners as mass murderers after a tragedy, now they want to blame the school's stated faith. They want to blame the community. They want to blame everyone and anything else but the killer. The murderer in the Colorado STEM school tragedy identified as trans. Let's go back to July of 2020. A Colorado transgender teenager who admitted to taking part in a shooting at a Denver area charter school that left one student dead, eight others wounded, was sentenced on Friday to life in prison plus an additional 38 years. The 19-year-old, there was also a 19-year-old co-defendant in the shooting who pled not guilty, and the one of them identified as being trans. Born female, identified as male, wanted to be trans. Or the Colorado Springs nightclub killer. Going to November of 2022. The suspect at Club Q, and I think we'll all remember this because of the way the media wanted to portray it otherwise, identifies as non-binary according to court filings. The suspect is non-binary and used they-them pronouns, and they would be addressed as MX instead of Mr. or Ms., according to a footnote in the court filing. The Maryland Rite Aid killer, identified as trans. The transgender Rite Aid employee, and this was in 2018, the 26-year-old who opened fire at the Rite Aid in Aberdeen, Maryland, shot three people dead, injured three others. This individual also identified as being trans. Now, why do I bring this up? Am I saying that every single person who struggles with gender dysphoria is a mass killer? Well, of course not. That's as stupid as saying that all law-abiding gun owners are somehow facilitators of mass murder. But let's be clear on something. There's a major problem in the trans community, particularly militant violence with their activists. I can't tell you the amount of video and everything that I saw last night of women getting punched in the head by trans activists, elderly people getting knocked to the ground by trans activists, kids getting spit on by trans activists, all kinds of actual physical violence. And threats of violence. This is just days away from the Trans Day of Vengeance. Coming up on April 1st, they're going to be out in front of the Supreme Court building. Their promo materials state, quote, "We need more than visibility. The Trans Day of Vengeance. Stop trans genocide." Well, I don't see trans genocide, but I do see dead school children at the hands of a trans activist. They're asking people to wear masks as well. You know, let's take the delusion a step further even. How well would it go over if the right promoted some bizarre day of vengeance? What if there was a parents' day of vengeance, Kane? How would that go over? Parents' day of vengeance. We need more than visibility. How would that go over?
Like a lead balloon.
I mean, I'm not making things up. There's a history of violence with the militant activist community. One female, and it's all over the world, not just in the United States. For instance, Kelly J. Keene, she went on a tour of Australia and New Zealand. And one of the reasons that that's getting so much attention is because the video of so many women being assaulted by men pretending to be women is one of the craziest things I've ever seen. We can't play any, I didn't send you guys any of the video because they're calling her a see you next Tuesday. They are screaming all kinds of absolutely misogynistic invectives at her, calling her a Nazi, all kinds of stuff. It is really bad. And all she has done is what J.K. Rowling does, to say that women exist. I mean, they were trying to go after J.K. Rowling's children because J.K. Rowling said that women should exist. This lady, this Keene lady, she had a rally in Melbourne, Australia, and there were men who were dressing like women who were attacking her on camera, trying to hit her, punching other women on camera, physically attacking women. One of them, one of the women who was attacked, is described by Spiked Online as a lesbian who nursed AIDS victims in San Francisco at the height of the epidemic in 1990s. In the 1990s. They were trying to beat her up. I mean, this is one of the wildest things ever. Feminists, you've lost the war. The war's lost. Let's be clear. Feminist lost the war. They lost it because they didn't draw the lines early enough. They lost it because they accommodated too much of this nonsense. And now look. I mean, it has to be, you have to prosecute it differently now. I mean, it's wild. And you know what? None of this gets attention. Because it's justified. Oh, their gender isn't affirmed. And if you think that that's unrealistic, then I'll point you once again, as we come full circle, back to the way the press handled this killer all day yesterday. All of this reminded me of the attempted massacre at Family Research Council's D.C. offices. We talked about this recently because the Southern Poverty Law Center. This murderer bought a gun, got three magazines, stopped by Chick-fil-A to pick up 15 sandwiches, and he wanted to smear the sandwiches into the dying faces of the staffers as they had their last breaths. He wanted to kill them and have them choke to death the rest of the way on the chicken sandwiches because he didn't like their position on same-sex marriage. Do you think that when people use the language like, oh, I don't know, like some of the stuff in this trans day of vengeance, stop trans genocide, that, I mean, genocide is an actual word. It has actual meaning. To call everyone else's refusal to also go along with your cosplay genocide is an insult to actual genocide. I mean, this is when you have this when people talk like this enough, like the Don't Say Gay bill. The media helped that too. There was literally nothing about that that said don't say gay or anything. It was about allowing parents to just approve what books go in their kids' taxpayer funded library. You know, they pay with their property taxes for that school and for the acquisition of those books. And they wanted to be able to have parental input on curriculum and books. And the media decided to call it, along with alphabet activists, don't say gay. That's why I really don't give anyone any quarter here, including feminists, because you all helped this to happen and bring it to the point that it is now. People just make stuff up. They're killing us. Or it's genocide. Don't say gay. When you say this enough, this hyperbole, somebody like this killer, like yesterday, is going to believe you. Now, here's the other part of it, and this is why I'm really careful in how we talk about it. And I wish the media was more careful, but they're not. You know, there's a copycat theory. Reason Magazine did a really good piece on this back in 2022, titled, "Are the Media Making Mass Shootings Worse?" And according to a growing body of research, yes, they are. They absolutely are. And there's a lot of data to support this. They feel incentivized. Killers feel incentivized by the coverage. It's highlighting some of the worst pathologies of these people and elevating them to this like superstar status by the way that the media covers it. And there's all kinds of criminologists who get into this. They said that one of the studies over University of Alabama found that winning a Super Bowl or an Academy Award garnered less media attention than committing a high profile mass killing. Perpetrators get pictured more on front pages than the victims. And there's a strong correlation between the number of victims harmed in the attacks and the amount of media attention that perpetrators receive. And that's true. In Columbine, you know that the murderous duo discussed which director would direct the movie about their crime in writings. And that almost every single mass casualty incident involving someone under the age of 25, which, by the way, most of them are over that age, but that they all cite Columbine somewhere on social media or later in writings that investigators find as inspiration without exception. All of this is backed up by data. I mean, the 24/7 coverage allows everything to grow and evolve. That's why the media should not be naming assailants. That's why we don't unless we can can't avoid it. But they shouldn't be posting their photos of these people. There were hundreds of criminologists that signed this letter demanding that media adopt new norms for covering this because they said you are contributing to contagion. And the media is completely not self-aware. So coming up, we have a number of things to get into. Still, even this TikTok bill is being hailed as the Patriot Act for the internet. What you need to know and why it's a danger. We're going to discuss that and so much more.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
So the Disney layoffs apparently are going to begin this week, according to CEO Bob Iger in a memo. They said they're going to inform employees this week that they're being laid off. It will be one of the first of three rounds of cuts that in total will amount to 7,000 job losses. The valuation plummeted last year, causing Disney to cut their costs. That's three rounds. Over 3,000 pounds of beef recalled for possible E. coli contamination. A Kansas meatpacking company has recalled almost 3,500 pounds of boneless beef chuck due to its potential contamination with E. coli, according to USDA. The routine inspection of a sample of ground beef tested positive for the strain, after which the Harper, Kansas-based outfit issued the recall. I wonder where their meat's from. How much you want to bet that it's not USA grade beef? Just saying. A couple of other things here. Agatha Christie is under attack by the woke censors. We're going to talk about that coming up because there's a lot more of that to get into. ESPN celebrates Leah Thomas during Women's History Month. And not other champion female swimmers. It's pretty amazing. And also a new study says exercise should be the first treatment for mental health problems. I've heard that before. And there's a lot of evidence. They said lifestyle changes, but the first and foremost should be exercises. It was conducted by a team of 13 Australian scientists and published by the British Medical Journal's Journal of Sports Medicine. Coming up, Stephen Holbrook, a very famed two-way lawyer, joins us next.
Want a behind-the-scenes look at The Dana Show? Subscribe to Dana's Chapter and Verse newsletter for a deeper dive in all things Dana at danalash.com.
Some of the solutions are, you know, we need to have some red flag laws. If the shooter was in a mental crisis, to allow for law enforcement to step in and temporarily make sure that they were safe and couldn't do harm to themselves or someone else. We need to expand background checks. Here in Tennessee, we've got the gun show loophole where
a crime is a crime. Quit calling it a loophole. If someone's a prohibited possessor, they cannot obtain a firearm in their state of residence or anywhere. Stop saying that it's a loophole. This is Democrat State Representative Bob Freeman, who is talking about everything but the root of the cause of this horrific tragedy that took place yesterday in Nashville. Now, welcome back to the program. Dana Lash here with you. You can listen coast to coast in a market near you. You can listen. You can stream it. You can watch the simulcast, YouTube, Facebook, or DirecTV channel 347. Now, as a result of this, there was a lot of movement in the House on a couple of pieces of gun control regulation. There was a lot of stuff going on with the ATF and pistol braces and all of this. And I wanted to touch on that. In fact, we had our really good friend, Stephen Holbrook. I wanted to book him last week. He's a busy man. You know, he's an attorney who isn't on social media, doesn't live his life on social media. So I wanted to have him last week because the pistol brace rule, as this relates to ATF regulation, we've talked a lot about these agencies creating a rule, having it treated as law, and then we go through this like weird, you know, legal purgatory period until which time a court repeals it. yet you're still, you know, you could still be penalized for it. There was specific stuff that I wanted to talk with him about, because he was involved particularly in a case that there might actually be, might make an exception for some of this. I don't know, but I wanted to bring him on. If you're unfamiliar with him, we've had him on the program before. You should know him if you have a firearm. Stephen Holbrook, he's an attorney. He specializes in constitutional cases, and he knows everything that there is to know about gun law. And it's so good to see you. He's the guy, by the way, who defeated the ATF before the Supreme Court. So just in case you needed anything else further to introduce him with, there it is. Stephen, always such a pleasure to have you. Thank you so much for giving us some of your time today.
My pleasure, Dana. Always good to see you.
Of course. And I really was very excited to talk with you about all of this stuff related to pistol braces. I mean, obviously we had everything that happened yesterday, which was, you know, horrifically tragic. There's some pause right now in D.C. on some of this stuff, not though on the clock with the pistol brace, et cetera, because I think that comes up at the end of May. For people unfamiliar, the ATF are ruling it to be a National Firearms Act item and an FA item. So you either have to destroy it or turn it in or something like that to the ATF, which I don't think anybody wants to do.
No.
This was after, Stephen, they had sent two letters prior to everybody, especially the guy, Bosco, who invented it, saying this was a completely legal item. And then in 2015, they kind of turned around, did a 180 out of nowhere and said it's not anymore. And so now a lot of people bought these with, you know, thinking they were being lawful. They were purchasing a legal item. And now they could be turned into felons if they do not turn their stuff in or destroy it. And it is at the end of May that this deadline happens, correct?
Yeah, you know, for years, ATF provided guidance to the public saying that the pistol braces were lawful. Now, there are different choices. You can register it as an NFA firearm. You can throw the brace away and get a real shoulder stock. Excuse me. And that way you have a real short barrel rifle, which this is not. Or you can take the barrel off and throw it away and put on a 16-inch barrel. Or you can just get rid of the brace. And so there's different ways to get in compliance. But one of the cases they cited, they did this very long publication in the Federal Register explaining why they adopted the rule and also trying to justify it. And one of the cases they cited is the case I argued in the Supreme Court, Thompson Center Arms versus United States. There's actually, in my office hanging here, if you see this picture in the background over my shoulder, mm-hmm. that's actually a drawing of me arguing the case.
Wow.
This was a 1991 case. The different justices were there. Justice Rehnquist, the Chief Justice. We had Justice White, Justice Scalia, some folks that are no longer there. But it had to do with the issue of short barrel rifles, which is what the brace issue has to do with. And so in the Thompson Center Arms ruling, the facts involved a pistol, the Contender carbine it was called, made by Thompson Center Arms, and a carbine kit, meaning a shoulder stock and a barrel that was 21 inches.
Mm-hmm.
You could take the pistol grip off and the pistol barrel off and put on the shoulder stock and the 21-inch barrel, and now you have a long-barreled rifle. So you convert it from a pistol, not an NFA item, to a rifle, not an NFA item. Now, if you wanted to do something illegal, you could leave the pistol barrel on.
Which you're not advocating for.
No, and put the shoulder stock on. Then you would have made a short barrel rifle.
Right.
But you know what you could do even easier with it? You could murder somebody with it. That's just pulling the trigger. But we don't say somebody's murdered a person just because they could.
Right.
I mean, you know, it takes the actual act and the mental intent. So with this carbine kit, the case goes to the Supreme Court. ATF says it's a short barrel rifle because you could make it into one, even though you know that you're not, the average person is not going to. There's even a warning on the shoulder mm-hmm. stock not to do that. And so we argued the case. We end up with a 5-4 positive decision. The government lost, and the decision, by the way, was written by Justice Souter, who was known to be a so-called liberal. The decision was, unless you actually assembled it as a short barrel rifle, it's not one. And one of the reasons for that conclusion was what's called the rule of lenity. It's an ancient rule that comes down to us from the English common law that says that if you have a criminal law and it's not clear that it applies to a certain conduct, then you construe the law in favor of a potential defendant, and the law does not apply to that person. I mean, remember the Roman emperor who would put a law up so high that you couldn't read it, and there that way they could prosecute people? The communists called this crimes by analogy, mm-hmm. where you could make something illegal and if something else was a little bit like it, you could, what the heck, show me the man, or show me the crime and I'll show you the man, whatever. Mm-hmm. So the court said that's a basic principle of due process, the rule of lenity, that if a criminal statute is ambiguous, you interpret it in favor of a person it might apply to and against the government. So that's what we came down to. There were three votes for the main opinion, and then there was a concurrent opinion by Justice Scalia joined by Justice Thomas. And so that made five votes against ATF. And the reason that applies here with the brace issue is that ATF for decades now has said that the braces constitute pistols. They're not right. short barrel rifles. They're not. If you look at the definition in the NFA of a rifle,
right.
it's made, designed, and intended to be fired from the shoulder. Intended. And so if it's not intended to be fired from the shoulder, it's not a rifle and therefore not a short barrel rifle. So with the rule of lenity, you apply those terms, which you shouldn't even have to apply to the rule of lenity when you look at the intent requirement in the statute itself. So that's why that case applies directly to this issue. And yet when ATF published their final rule, they cited that case as somehow supporting them.
I know, which was incredibly confusing when I was reading this. I thought, wait, that's not how I interpreted any of this. We're talking with our very good friend, Stephen Holbrook, who is an attorney. He's argued Second Amendment cases in front of the Supreme Court. So does that, just to distill this down, does that mean, for people who don't understand the difference between a pistol brace, and I've explained it on Substack and on air, and, you know, I mean, your shoulder stock, I mean, there's a significant difference, but the brace was actually invented to help disabled veterans. And that is, you know, that's the thing in question. I mean, I don't think I'd never shoulder anything with that thing, but, you know, that's a whole other story. But doesn't this case ultimately, the one that you argued, the Thompson case, ultimately establish that if somebody owns, you know, a pistol, they have a brace, as long as they have, 16-inch barrel, they got, you know, upper receiver, whatever, they can, as long as it's not configured, known like that, then they don't have to have the brace destroyed. Is that a correct interpretation of ultimately what that case, how that case bears on this?
Well, if the brace is not a shoulder stock, it's not a rifle.
Okay.
It's not intended to be shouldered.
Right.
And so that's what's at issue. We don't know how ATF is going to come down on specific braces, because when they first proposed the rule, they had this long calculus where
yes.
if it weighed a certain amount and if it had certain sights, all of this.
I understood Monty Python's measurement of what is or isn't a witch better than I understood that.
They themselves, on the final rule, they said, well, that's too confusing. And so why don't we adopt a rule that's even more confusing? Because it doesn't even give you as much specifics. It doesn't give you specific characteristics. They say, well, what does it seem to be designed for and all that? So there's litigation definitely on that's going to happen, and I think is already in place. We don't know where this is headed, but the bottom line is that Congress is the one that makes criminal laws. An agency doesn't. ATF has no more business trying to expand the definition of the National Firearms Act than you or I do.
Right.
Congress makes, well, look, that was eighth grade civics, right? Congress mm-hmm. makes the laws. The executive branch enforces the laws.
Schoolhouse Rock even
decides the laws. And so this shouldn't even be something that they're doing. If they think somebody has a short barrel rifle, they can get an indictment, they take them to court, and the jury decides whether it's a short barrel rifle.
Right.
But what they're trying to do here is way out of bounds. And I think there's going to be some court decisions. You know, we have. The Supreme Court is getting fed up with all the agency overreach. We had the EPA West Virginia case decided last year.
The CDC rent moratorium, all of that. I mean, it is. I tell people this is the firearms are just a variable. This is about government agencies that are trying to create law and circumvent Congress.
Right. We had the major question doctrine where if it's something really important, I mean, Congress would have spoken to it. You don't just assume as an agency you have power to regulate it. And then we have the Chevron doctrine that's fallen into disfavor where you defer to the government. I mean, I've litigated over the years a number of cases involving ATF, and the first thing the government appeals to is, I call it the divine right of deference. It's kind of like a divine right of kings where we're the government, so we're right. I mean, the court should let the agency interpret the law, not the court interpret the law.
Right.
So I think there's some reining in coming
for
agencies generally.
So last question for you, talking with our friend Stephen Holbrook. So, I mean, I'm wondering, like, what should people do? I mean, because I have people ask me, well, what do I do? I don't know what to, I don't know what the ATF is going to do. I don't know if this is going to take us into that point where, like they did with the, you know, the bump stocks, which I don't even like bump stocks, but the ATF had no business doing what they were doing. But that was a long time before Fifth Circuit overturned that. So you have this weird, this purgatory period, for the lack of a better way to describe it, where, you know, people are kind of, you know, they could be criminals or not.
Well, there's only three viable choices that are realistic. I mean, the two choices of destroy your pistol or turn it into ATF, nobody's going to do that. Like I said at the beginning, you can take the short barrel off, get rid of it, put on a 16-inch barrel. You can just get rid of the brace. Or if you want to register it as a short barrel rifle, you can do that tax-free. There's no $200 fee. And that would leave you the option, if you wanted to put a real shoulder stock on it.
Yeah.
So if you ever wanted a tax-free short barrel rifle, here's your chance.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, Stephen Holbrook, you're one of our favorites. We so appreciate you. By the way, his latest book, I got to ask about this real quick, The America's Rifle, The Case for the AR-15. Sir, I have to tell you, such amazing timing because, as you know, the Washington Post tried to really demonize this rifle, one of the most popular rifles. I think it's the most popular rifle for women. I can't even tell you how many I have. I just got a brand new one. I haven't even taken out yet. But the case for the AR-15, America's Rifle, which I think everyone needs to get, the gun and the book, yes. But I just wanted to get your quick response to that Washington Post piece.
Well, they've tried to demonize the AR-15 for decades now. It's the handguns used to be bad, rifles were good until 1989. Suddenly they invent the term assault weapon, and that applies to a rifle with certain characteristics that help you hold it more stably, you know, like with a pistol grip, devices on it that might make it easier to fit your body, like the adjustable shoulder stock. It's nothing but a semi-automatic rifle. It's an advanced design. It's very desirable. It's in common use by law-abiding people for lawful purposes, which is what the Supreme Court's test is for a protected arm, the arm that's protected by the Second Amendment. So we've got the most ridiculous decisions coming out. They're at it again in terms of trying to resist the Supreme Court's precedent and the New York Bruin case.
Mm-hmm.
We just had... yesterday, a court from Delaware, federal district court, upholding the new ban there.
Yes.
And just making the silliest statements about, well, a handgun is a lot safer to use for self-defense, but an assault rifle, and they don't distinguish that from other rifles.
They
say, oh, this .223 caliber, whoa, it's very powerful.
Yeah.
But it's no more powerful coming out of a AR-15 than it is.
They're ballistics illiterate.
Shot.
We're out of time. I wish I could spend a whole day talking. I mean, you're just a wealth of information. America's Rifle, The Case for the AR-15. Stephen Holbrook, one of the best out there to do it. Stephen, so good to see you. Thank you so much, sir,
Dana,
for your
always
expertise.
A pleasure to meet with you.
Of
you
course.
Take care.
Thank you.
It's his life mission to make bad decisions. It's time for Florida Man.
Now, I don't understand. I guess this fellow doesn't live in the villages because I thought you had to be old to live in the villages. I don't mean old. You know what I mean? Villages. Like, you have to be in, like, there it is. I never know when it's going to ambush me. I'm, like, waiting. So, The headline is this. A romantic rival enters a plea in case of defecating on car of executive in the Villages. I mean, could you have more prepositions in this headline? A romantic rival entered a plea in a case in which he was charged. He defecated on the vehicle of some executive in the Villages. Jeremy Powell is 30 years old, and he pled not guilty in Sumter County Court. See, that's why I was asking, because he's 30 years old. So the director of accounting at the Villages, he apparently dutied on the car. That guy walked out to his driveway and saw the passenger windshield side wiper of his vehicle was broken. There were scratches all over the doors, and someone pooped on the roof of his car. So he looked at his surveillance footage, saw the guy doing it, and called the police. And so he recognized the guy from work. It took place on Super Bowl Sunday, and apparently it was over a girl. So they arrested this dude, and he had a crazy high blood alcohol content level. It was nuts. All right, tomorrow I'll tell you about the guy who thought he was just going to walk onto a plane with a suitcase full of drugs. Didn't work out well for him, as you can imagine. Third hour on the way.
What is your responsibility to protect the other students in class with students who are credibly accused of violent crime?
Our responsibility as a district, but more so as a school board, is to ensure that everybody has a free, fair, and public education. We're not in the practice of dismissing students because they've made mistakes.
What if the mistake is shooting somebody and getting charged with attempted murder?
You know, I think that's an opportunity for us as a district to have ensure and make sure that we have a robust safety plan with those students and those family and that family and those impacted. But I can't say that I believe the expulsion of a student is what we should be doing, or the denying them a free and fair public education.
Oh my gosh, what?
Especially because some of these instances that we're talking about are happening outside of our jurisdiction as a school district.
Like if the attempted murder happens off school grounds, then that's not DPS's call?
Yeah, I know it sounds terrible, but it's not Denver Public. That's the role of the Denver Police. And so we rely on our partners with the law enforcement to help us with these issues and then being able to create safety plans.
Wow. What on earth? That's the school board director for Denver Schools saying that students who make mistakes shouldn't be removed from in-person learning, even if they're charged with shooting someone. What? This is restorative justice looks like. Welcome back to the program. Top of our third hour, Dana Lash with you. That is what restorative justice looks like. Well, we don't want them to miss in student learning. Well, what about the kid that they shot? They're going to miss in student learning, probably because of the weak deterrence that allowed this kid to become, a monster. I mean, it's hypothetical, but at the same time, this is what played into Parkland. I mean, there's a reason why all of a sudden, almost literally overnight, the referrals of students and misbehavior to police dropped dramatically. And it was because Robert Runcie just stopped reporting it. That came out, by the way, in the Stoneman Douglas, their commission. And to me, that's kind of stunning. I'm just stunned by this. Man, they're making the case for homeschooling. If that's exactly what that is. Kane, what are you thinking over there? You're antsy.
I'm just confused because this is the same group that push and continue to push for red flag laws. Mm-hmm. Yet, when they have the information that a student has shot someone else or that they've made those threats, that doesn't deter them from attending the school or it makes zero sense to me. Mm-hmm. I don't understand how you can be so for red flag, but then once you know all this information, you're not going to do anything about it.
Oh, we're not going to do. We just don't want them to miss out on in-person learning, Kane. You're so mean, missing out on the in-person learning. Oh, my gosh. Oh, I mean, that just assumes they're actually learning anything at all. So this is a new development that's coming out. There's a lot of information that is coming out about everything that happened with Nashville. And one of those things is that the killer, she was under care of a doctor. The Nashville chief had said that she was under doctor's care for emotional disorder. Her parents believed that she had sold the only firearms that she owned, but unbeknownst to them, there were others. That is now coming out. So she was receiving, they say it's mental health treatment. Stop it. Stop like rewording stuff. It's mental health treatment. She was under care for a mental health treatment. That was what it was. And they said that most of the pieces on this. They're like, oh, she had purchased and she had other firearms. She had hidden 7 firearms. All of this, they hide that. They say that she had these firearms and was hiding them. But what about the mental health information? Mental health issues were known. Warning signs had already appeared. I mean, who intervened? I mean, if the parents already, the parents' answer was, is odd, the way that it's put. Because if the parents had, they said that, well, the parents, you know, thought she had sold everything unbeknownst to them. Well, why would she have been selling anything? Was there, had been, there been a discussion with her and her parents? These are questions that's important to ask, because you have all of this language and all of this blame on all of these other innocent people and incitement from media outlets on other towards other innocent people. But if there were all of these warning signs and the family saw them, yes, 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 I understand. People are like, well, it's really hard to react, you know, in hindsight. And it's, you know, there's, you know, you have to think of, you know, it can be a lot more difficult. No, I don't accept that as an excuse. I really don't. I don't accept it. I mean, this idea that, you know, her, the parents, they knew that she had some. I still, this is still predictable. My point still stands in that this was someone who was seeking mental health treatment and warning signs were there. She was under doctor's care. So it was serious enough that she was under regular care. And so that's actually, that's a pattern with these suspects that can't be ignored. You know, the other pattern is that she apparently, according to police, had scoped out a number of different places for her, to carry this out. She looked at apparently a number of places and chose to not engage in certain places if they had armed security. I put that in your email newsletter. You have that. I mean, all of this stuff is going to come out. So what is to do with this situation with the violent trans activism? I mean, they have like the Day of Rage. It's coming up April 1st. Vengeance. Huh? Oh, the Day of Vengeance. Day of Rage, same difference.
Kind of.
It pretty much is. I mean, it sounds like a horror film. I'm curious. I wanted to get into a couple of other things, too, that I think is important. First and foremost, apparently, while Matt Taibbi was testifying before the House on March 9th, I think this was, the Wall Street Journal has the story. The FBI showed up at his house. They actually showed up to his house. They were at his personal home the day that he was testifying before the Select Subcommittee on the Weaponization of Federal Government. The IRS left him a note saying that he needed to call the IRS. So he was told in a call that his tax returns had been rejected owing to concerns over identity theft, 2018 and 2021. He provided the House Oversight Committee documentation showing his returns had actually been electronically accepted. He says the IRS never notified him or his accountants of a problem after he filed that more than 4.5 years ago. And they said that this is weird. They said apparently there was a problem with this 2021 tax return. It was rejected and then rejected again. And he said that it's because the IRS apparently owes him, not the other way around. And the thing is, when did the IRS start sending people, to agents to people's houses for something that they could have, like, isn't that something they'd send you a letter for? I mean, if they're challenging a tax return, don't they send a letter?
Yeah.
I mean, and wouldn't they notify his accountants? Because he actually uses an accounting firm. Wouldn't they notify the accountant?
Yeah.
And then if they wanted to schedule the audit, and I know this because of Everything Everywhere All at Once, They schedule it at the agent's office, right? You don't just show up, you know, knock, knock, knock. Hi.
Right.
It's your friendly neighborhood IRS. It's just weird. So Jim Jordan sent a letter to the IRS commissioner and the secretary of treasury asking for explanation. Taibbi tweeted that he didn't want to talk about it, at least not until he sees how they respond to Jordan's letter. But that's weird. And this isn't, it's not unusual. It is not at all unusual. Think of what they did to the Tea Partiers and all of this. I mean, this is like kind of par for the course for the IRS. It is so weird, though, that just happened to be on the 9th when he was... Were they there while he was actually testifying? That's the one thing that Wall Street Journal doesn't say. I'm just curious. Were they actually right there? Now, speaking of tech, etc., I wanted to share this. A lot of people are raising some red flags about this. A lot. This TikTok bill. So we've been having the hearing on TikTok in D.C. And there is now a bill, excuse me for pulling this up, that is, it was introduced by Senator Mark Warner from Virginia. And it is bad. It isn't a bill that actually is just about banning TikTok. And I haven't read through everything, but I've seen enough to where it's like, wow, there's more? I'm kind of shocked. I mean, I think if you're drafting a bill, whether you agree with it or not, if you're drafting a bill to ban TikTok, wouldn't it just be, okay, well, you're banning TikTok? It's pretty simple and straightforward, right? I mean, right? How would it read? Like, oh, here to full with. TikTok shall be banned. Blah, blah, blah. You know, wouldn't it would be something along those lines, right? Well, apparently it's being called the Patriot Act for the internet. So it is, and Greg Price does have some screenshots. There's a number of sources. I'm actually kind of going through it right now, and I'll send this out to you in your prep email. Addressing information and communication technology products and services that pose undue or acceptable risk. They get into imposing and enforcing any mitigation measure to address any risk arising from any covered transaction by any person or with respect to any property subject to jurisdiction of the United States that the secretary determines, blah, blah, blah. They get into game desktop applications, gaming, mobile, payment, web-based applications, AI, machine learning, satellite payloads, wireless area network, software, hardware, cable access, wireline access, core networking, all kinds of stuff. Oh, it just goes on and on and on. If you're in violation, you can go to jail for 20 years. You can be fined $1 million, have your property seized. And they can determine that a foreign government is an adversary without even telling Congress that they think that the foreign government is an adversary, and they are not, they are protected from FOIA, Freedom of Information Act request. What does that have to do with banning TikTok? Hi. Exactly. This is some uniparty BS, is what it is. Because remember, Patriot Act was used against parents who spoke out at school board meetings. The Department of Justice actually used what was given to them, the power allocated to them through the Patriot Act, to go after and target parents. Can you imagine this in their hands? Can you imagine? Hoo boy. This sounds like, oh, we see a need for something. We are going to immediately get involved in this. And exploit it and try to get more power. Wow. This is rough. So for all the people sponsoring it, Chuck Grassley is a co-sponsor. Shelley Moore Capito. Oh, man, there's a lot of Republicans on here. Oh. Lindsey Graham. Tom Tillis. Chuck Grassley. And I like Chuck Grassley. John Thune. Let's see, Joe Manchin, Jerry Moran, Kansas, Dan Sullivan, Arkansas, Susan Collins, Maine. A lot of Republicans on here. So that seems to be kind of problematic, you think? A little problematic here. This is one of the reasons why I was so critical of the Patriot Act, because I thought this goes above and beyond this stated purpose. And this is the same thing. You're not going to be able to ever, you can't trade your liberty for security, because you'll get neither. I mean, this is, it's troubling. You, and I'll, like I said, I will, I'm going to put this information up on Substack as well. So make sure you go to Chapter and Verse and subscribe. Links are available all over in my social media profile. But yeah, this is bad. This is the ban TikTok. And there's a reason why you got Democrats and Republicans that are totally like all in on support. There's a lot of stuff in here everybody likes, including, I mean, it's basically a giant, it's like government surveillance. This is even, I mean, this takes what TikTok is and makes it worse.
Of all your favorite talk hosts, one of these is not like the others. The Dana Show.
Today, we renew our call for common sense gun safety legislation, including a ban on assault weapons. This is an epidemic.
Golly, I would not have played that amazing Zeppelin song for her. Randy Weingarten, America Federation for Teachers. Epidemic. The epidemic is what is happening to kids who are being pumped full of hormones and being experimented on with medically unnecessary surgery because of what people like Randy Weingarten are protecting in classrooms. The brainwashing and the sexual seppuku, essentially, of children. I mean, that in addition to the CRT, DEI, all of the other stuff and keeping classrooms locked down, etc. Welcome back to the program. Dana Lash here with you. More developments are coming from this Nashville story. Apparently, the killer was angry at her parents for their Christian faith. And I mean, it does sound like they absolutely were. She was targeting the school. And when she went through the church first, that sounded like, you know, that, I mean, she was targeting the church. She was targeting the, I mean, there was definitely, it was, I mean, it was because they were Christian. I mean, there's no other way to put it. But apparently, as we told you, the killer was under doctor's care for mental health issues. There's always warning signs. There's not a single exception. So what were people doing? How severe was it? And what were people doing in response? I want to make sure I get to some of this. I mean, there's a lot. I mean, this is, you know, this is going to be discussed for quite a little bit because Congress is now pushing it. I have tons of different cuts from lawmakers, etc. here. I wanted to play this. This is audio sum by three. This is MSNBC, Nicole Wallace. This is another example of the press doing everything but blame the individual involved. Listen.
And Frank, it's not just that we don't do anything. There are at least three Republican members of Congress who celebrate these weapons Mary's talking about, who wear AR-15 style pins on their lapels. We have something more than inaction. It's not a gridlock problem. It's an enthusiasm for the gun culture on the right.
Jeez, oh, the gun culture on the right. And then you should have heard what this guy had said. He said Republicans are fighting for murders. This, like, Democrat operative.
It's worse than doing nothing. It's worse than being neutral on the issue. They actually fight to see these things happen. That's the bottom line. And look, you know, states have tried individually to do the right thing. But until we have a national law that impacts the ability to access assault-style weapons,
what about a national law for murder?
We're not going to get our hands around
what
this.
What is assault-style weapon? Because these people are moronic. One of the things that Holbrooke had said is that, you know, this is what the Supreme Court uses as a determination, commonly owned. In fact, it's something that Scalia touched on in his Heller decision. I've written about this quite a bit. Some of the people at Slate really just butchered this, you know, a few years ago, but he was citing, you know, commonly owned firearms, commonly owned weapons. And one of the things that he had mentioned as an aside was, you know, the colonies rules on affrighting, which, you know, is old timey brandishing back in the day, but with something that was uncommon. So he's like, if someone's walking around maliciously with a head axe, you know, in a threatening manner, you know, he's, you know, the affrighting rule, that was a law that different colonies had on that. He said one of the reasons that it was elevated to such is because, you know, it was a head axe. It was an uncommonly owned item at the time. And he's like, and that's always been the litmus test for the Supreme Court, is the common ownership of said firearm. And so everything that he's saying right there is not only completely uneducated and ignorant and embarrassing, and I cringe for him, but it's just completely out of step with actual established law that we've had for, you know, how many centuries, like a couple centuries now. It's completely out from established law. The end. No, how about we just ban murder? Why, or how about we talk about what really is kind of at the core of all of this? I mean, you had someone who was mentally disturbed to the point where they felt that they had the will to go and murder school children. Actually go into an elementary school. Let's talk about that. Let's talk about what led up to that. This individual didn't feel affirmed enough, so they went and shot kids. I mean, the media is like acting as though it's somehow justified. Do you remember when I said that they love crying mothers and they lost their minds at me? Because it was true. Because I was right. Because I still am right. It gets them ratings. They're never interested in solving anything. They're not interested in any solution. If they were, why didn't Nicole Wallace push back on this clown? Even if I agreed with someone, I would have stepped up and said, wait. That's way over the line. You can't make your point without saying something stupid like that. What do you think? Hillary Clinton, which I'll tweet this out. Hillary Clinton's trying to get out there. She goes, we had an assault weapons ban and it prohibited the manufacture or sale of certain use of semi-automatic weapons. It actually didn't really do that. It actually only targeted the cosmetic attachment. She doesn't even know what her own damn bill did. She embarrasses. Hillary Clinton should embarrass all women that have more than one brain cell. She doesn't even know what her law did. It banned cosmetic attachments that had nothing to do with rate of fire. It didn't change the function or performance of the firearm at all whatsoever. She doesn't even know what her bill did. And then she falsely claims that mass shootings dropped during that decade. No, they didn't. They absolutely did not. The Department of Justice, I've told you how many surveys. When you go, I put it out in the newsletter. Everybody's got receipts. Everybody has receipts. The Department of Justice studied. They found that there was no evidence that any ban had any impact on gun homicide rates at all whatsoever. A Journal of General Internal Medicine study concluded that the assault weapons ban had no impact on gun homicide rates whatsoever. RAND Corporation, left-leaning, concluded with updates earlier this year that an assault weapons ban had no impact on reducing gun homicide rates at all whatsoever. The New York Times, a thorough deep dive, concluded that assault weapons ban would have no impact on reducing gun homicide rates at all whatsoever. PolitiFact study and fact check. Yes, it is true. An assault weapons ban would have absolutely no impact on reducing gun homicide rates at all whatsoever. The CDC even intimated as such when they had to hide their report showing that defensive gun usage greatly outweighed usage by criminals in illegal possession. Twice they had to hide it. And they had to choke back that aspect of it in two subsequent studies. So, again, are we going to be serious about this or not? Are we going to discuss actual real solutions or not? Because I get the impression that people don't want solutions. They want chaos. And then they act as though they have compassion while doing absolutely nothing at all whatsoever to facilitate discussion. And these people, like these fools that we were just playing, they're not serious. None of those people are serious. They keep going back to the same things that didn't work. There was a woman, I'm not going to play this audio. She took over a live stream after she's not even a member of the community. Newsbusters called her out because she apparently went on this live stream. She was from Illinois, Highland Park, Illinois, somewhere, and she decided that she was going to take over that press conference and apparently speak for the people in that community. And good heavens, she was identified as a mother in the community by all the press. Yeah, Newsbusters has, I was looking for my, for I retweeted them on this. She was, that to me is a little, that's above, just beyond the line. She was quote unquote on vacation, but she gave all of these conflicting stories. She said she was on vacation, and then she said that she was there to meet a friend. And then some were wondering if she was, you know, because she's like a, apparently an anti-gun activist. And she couldn't get her story straight. And they were saying, oh, it's a mother in Nashville. Well, she was from Highland Park, Illinois, and she apparently left where her family was and then went over there to the news cameras. And they were saying, oh, she's speaking on behalf of parents. But and they called her a mother in Nashville. CNN called her that. But she wasn't. But was she lobbying? Because she kept, again, changing her story. She said she was visiting her sister-in-law. Then she said she met someone online through similar interests and she was there. Then she said she was on vacation with her family. I mean, it seemed incredibly insincere, and that makes people question the legitimacy of it. I have a couple of other things I want to get to while we have some time. And let's do that, because I got some wokery for you. Because wokery is just... So did you see the story? New York Post had it. A man was left sobbing in a JFK airport because a TSA agent hit his testicles. It's a man who identifies as a woman. The unidentified flyer took to social media to vent about the incident, in which he said the agent humiliated him in front of everyone. They deleted all their posts. They said, hi, so a TSA agent at JFK punched me in the genitals. They deleted their posts, apparently, when the airport started asking questions. Yelled at me for having a penis and humiliated me in front of everyone after I said, please stop. And he posted a photo of himself crying in the airport bathroom, because that's what one does. Immediately capture the grief, and then, you know. And they said that the agent followed them in the bathroom. Really? I don't believe you. I don't believe you. Even, no, because first off, no, it's JFK airport. JFK doesn't care. Right. They want you in and out. They hate you. Get in and out. They said that, they said that the agent followed them into the women's bathroom. So the man was in the women's bathroom. You know what? If you're a man in the women's bathroom, I'm going to talk mad crap about you too. You're preying on me and making me feel uncomfortable in my space. And you're demanding more accommodation than me, which is sexist and patriarchal progressively. So they've said all this stuff. They kept posting all these pictures of themselves in the bathroom crying and doing all this stuff. And I mean, it was just ridiculous. Yeah, he was nursing his testicles in the women's restroom. Takes some real balls to do this. So they said, so they ended up deleting their tweets. I just don't believe this. The airport's like, well, we apologize for your experience. What about making sure that your employees feel like they can be safe in the bathroom? I just don't believe any of this. I don't believe it. Like the Florida Panthers, they were going at these two brothers because they didn't want to wear the alphabet warm-up jerseys during Pride Night because of religious beliefs. Why are you demanding that hockey players wear jerseys that affirm the type of genitals that you like? What does that have to do with them? You're infringing on them. Why are you bossing people around, telling them what to wear? I mean, golly, I wish if I could drive this train to where I wanted it to go, man, oh man. But the idea that you have to have it affirmed, you don't affirm me unless you wear this, the colors of how I like to have sex in your jersey. And they were like very cool about it. They're like, no judgment on how anyone lives their lives, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, they couldn't be nicer, but they're like, we're just not going to do this because, you know, we have faith too. That's the one thing with militant activists. They act like no one else has, there's no freedom for dissent and there's no freedom of association either. You're owned outright. Or the rage mob cometh. We have a Today in Stupidity on the way. Man, I tell you, the Day of Rage is on April 1st. Or Vengeance, whatever, same thing.
Listen to The Dana Show live on the Odyssey app. Weekdays, noon to 3 p.m. Eastern Time.
Man or woman?
Don't know any history of mental illness at this time, but we are looking at that as the investigation is ongoing. And I'm sorry.
She identifies as transgender man or woman?
Woman.
Remember how... Did you hear how the press asked that question? Because that was the police chief. And there was a lot of, like, they were kind of trying to go at him a little bit. to say that he made it confusing or something, or that did you hear the reporter ask it? Did she identify as a transgender man or woman? Right. Well, transgender man means you're a chick who identifies as a man. Yeah, and so people, so you know what? These are people who deal with facts, not whatever made up language you want to use for your damn cosplay. He was like, well, she identified as a woman. So everyone was like, oh, well, it was a man identified as a woman? And that's how, why there was like so much confusion, because of the stupid wokery. Can you imagine, like, you know, you sitting here, chirp 19, we got a bolo on a they, them. Can you imagine? We got reports of a they, them here who is jaywalking across I-95. It's a they, them. Over. Can you imagine?
How can you tell it's a they, them?
I'm sorry. The hell did you say?
How can you tell if it's a they, them?
It's a they, them. Over.
How do you know?
Can you describe the suspect, please? Yeah, it's a person. Over.
Those are the details we're looking for.
Do you see how this makes it so much more difficult? For reality. Come on. You know? Yeah, 190. So Frank and Beans involved. Frank and Beans, over. It's the reality of our situation. Today in stupidity, Kane.
Good Lord. All right, we've got the Harpies from The View. Listen to what these girls were talking about on the show today. They don't want patriotism to be hijacked. Listen.
Sarah and I, we've had this discussion about the flag and that.
Oh, that's another thing. But I put my flag out because I don't want Republicans to think that they own the flag, okay?
Yeah.
I'm a liberal Democrat. That flag goes out.
This is the crowd applauding.
On my and that's the issue. It's been
they make something
the notion of patriotism and the notion of America and the American flag.
Can you believe that he said that
co-opted by the
green
right
isn't a great color? Right. I mean, that's my color. Right. I'm not the color green. I just can't believe he said that.
I don't want you thinking that you own green.
Good heavens. All I hear is bark, 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 bark. All right, so tonight, actually, I think I'm going to be on Jesse Waters. So it was a crazy day yesterday. Our prayers are still with Mississippi and Nashville. Folks, sign up for the newsletter. God bless.